Hi everyone, this is Sid Sriram. I have an album titled Siddharth, and it's coming out on August 25th. And you're now listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Yeah. My name is Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with talented and interesting individuals linked to the global Indian and South Asian community. It's informal and informative, adding insights to our evolving cultural expressions, where each person can proudly say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. Hi, everyone. On this episode of Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, a conversation with vocalist, songwriter, and musician Sid Sriram. Stay tuned. Once again, thank you for listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing and sharing it with your friends and family, and for following along on all that social media. If you're enjoying these episodes, please also take a moment to submit a kind review and rating, as it's very, very much appreciated. So there's truly something to be said about things that offer harmony, especially when an experience can offer power and peace at the same time, or when you feel a racing, speedy quality to something in your soul, yet feel completely serene with a sense of belonging. For Sid Sriram, there's a quality inherent in the Carnatic music of South India that he describes as universal truth. Sid was born in Chennai and grew up in Fremont, California, where learning from his mother, a Carnatic music teacher, and training at Boston's Berklee College of Music have allowed him to share this truth with audiences in India and across the world as one of the most popular Indian film industry singers of the past decade. For his latest offering, Sid has a new English language album releasing this month called Siddharth, where now that soulful blending and harmony are the product of many formative experiences and an obvious confluence of traditions. The album was offered Fuel and Spark in Minneapolis, where intensive and intimate musical exploration brought Sid's California upbringing and Indian traditions together as a unique and truly comforting discovery that simply felt like home. A few months ago, Sid had performed on NPR's Tiny Desk concert, and the weave of R&B, soul, pop, Carnatic, indie, and jazz traditions was incredibly palpable. He embarks on a USA tour this September, and we caught up recently for a chat about the new album, about the creative experience, and even about the power of silence. But we started by talking about the thought that goes into preparation and practice.
When you've started off things like the Tiny Desk concert or even just like your regular day and thinking about ignition and preparation and practice, you know, at this point in your journey with art and music, how do you prepare or practice differently today maybe compared to when you were first starting out or for that matter, even when you were a kid?
Sure. I think now my goal and the hope of what I think I do execute on a daily basis is from when I was starting out or when I was younger, it was like, okay, a task was going to come or a big something was happening. So like really kind of get in the mode of preparation for that thing and build towards an event or show or whatever, like studying for a test almost. I think the biggest shift that's occurred for me in the last like few years has been to make the work a daily routine rather than feeling like it's an ignition leading to an arc that kind of like reaches the point that I come down off of it. Let there be the same kind of trigger points, ignitions, points of work and rigor on a daily basis. So then it just becomes a way of life rather than goal oriented. So now I have things that I do daily. The work is muscle memory rather than just like, oh, I need to really kind of prepare for something.
I was talking to a classical Indian artist named Kaushiki Chakraborty, and she was sharing that in the past, she would prepare for the beginning of a performance. And in some ways now her preparation is more to how she feels at the end. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but for you integrating that sort of preparation and practice, has it changed even and bled into the other aspects of your life where, you know, sort of practice and preparation means something different to you now?
Oh, definitely. And yeah, I think for me, the biggest thing is like, for the longest time, practice, preparation, work was all solely based on my journey with music and artistry. But when this shift happened, when it became more of like trying to integrate these things on a daily kind of like micro level, then it definitely changed the way I approach everything. And if anything I've learned, especially in the last year and a half, it's that your artistry can't be going on a certain path and your life just as a human being on a separate one. If that's happening, then you're pretty, I don't know if it's a strong word, but disingenuous to your practice, you know? And I think once I started taking this more elemental approach to music and to art and to vocalizing and really religiously kind of following that, then that definitely bled into everything that I do, whether it be working out, whether it just be mindfulness. The ultimate pursuit and goal is to be present at all times and not be thinking about the past or the future, but just be very here. And I think that's what the shift in perspective with the pursuit of music, what that gave me was this idea or the seed that presence in every aspect of life is integral to, I don't know, I feel like fulfilled and just kind of like living optimally.
A lot of people come to that, you know, that sort of surprise or aha moment, or even like that spark that allows them to have a little bit more clairvoyance, right? Because they've been at the precipice of something, that they've actually like been in some turmoil. I mean, was that spark, that change, that shift, was that the result of just a lot of experience or more, you know, something that said, hey, you know what, I really do need to make this kind of shift because it's critical for my daily practice, my art, you know, my life?
Sure. I think like anything, that any kind of shift, like you just said, requires some sort of an engine to kind of like, for it to become a point of inflection rather than just going on the same trajectory. For me, I think it was probably, as is true with many people, it was the pandemic. My career 2019, 2020 in the world of Indian film music was kind of at the very peak. I was operating at a level that I'd always wanted to. And yeah, I was, you know, doing quite well. And one thing I realized in retrospect, once the pandemic hit, was I was really burnt out. I wasn't taking care of myself, like physically or mentally. I was really running on an empty tank, you know, and I didn't realize it at the time because the ego was well fed. I was very busy. I was moving constantly. So there wasn't much time for like quiet introspection. And the pandemic was basically only that, you know what I mean? Yeah. So once the pandemic hit, I was supposed to be going on this world tour in the middle of 2020, obviously got canceled. I was in India and I went back to Fremont, California, where I grew up, to lockdown with my parents. Yeah. And yeah, so many mornings started off with just staring at the ceiling with no idea of what to do. I had no idea whether like stage performance was ever going to be a thing anymore. I didn't know what music was going to turn into. So I think that forced stillness, the forced quiet, because I think without something like that happening, I wouldn't have ever kind of taken the time. I would have continued running at the same rate that I was running at before. But that started off with frustration and just despair. And then over time turned into, okay, this is what it is. So what are you going to do with it? Really connecting and reconnecting with music on a core level, where it wasn't about praise or recognition or anything, but just about music again, which then took me down the path, especially with Carnatic music, just like practicing hours on hours on end during the pandemic alone or with my mom. That ultimately then leading into this relooking at the purpose of what I'm doing, and then not just purpose, but also the way in which I do it, what I'm doing with my days.
So you mentioned the kind of like forced stillness, and, you know, certainly the pandemic became an ignition point for so many people, artists and otherwise. But for someone whose music fills up so much space, I mean, I'm thinking about this now, and music being something that occupies, you know, space in such an elegant way. And for you, you know, your music fills up so much space sonically and even spiritually, perhaps. How now, given that moment in time that you just reflected on, how now do you seek silence? And I'm going to connect this in a weird way back to Fremont, because I think about like going to Fremont and getting off the Stevenson Boulevard exit off of 880 as these like on ramps and off ramps that were constantly getting onto roads. And I'm just curious whether music was in some ways kind of the gateway to sort of getting to that silence, and also maybe the exit from that silence into sort of like the real world where it's not so silent.
I think now The silence is something that I try to find, and just like, it's a good question, man. I think like in discrete moments, not really thinking about it as like, because I honestly don't, I haven't had much time just to stay in place in the last, especially since this year started. I've been constantly moving about. And I think having kind of like gotten into this groove of a rigorous practice of daily kind of different things that I make sure I do, what that has given me, I think when you really dig deep into these routines, you start to lock into a groove of sorts. Yeah. And then when you're in that groove, you're moving in a way that just feels not even just efficient, but you're moving with momentum. You're moving with the wind rather than against it. And I think because that has become a reality for me in terms of how I feel like my life is moving and my day-to-day is moving, I kind of get these times where I can quickly just like, not mentally check out, but tap into something that feels like an inner quiet.
Right.
Even if it's just for minutes, or like if I'm on a flight, or if at the end of a day, you know what I mean? Like, and I do take it for granted still. This is still very much like a daily kind of reminder, and it takes not just the physical act of doing, but like a lot of the work is mental. But I feel like I now what I can do is I can identify when, okay, like I feel the need for this moment to myself, this moment of quiet introspection, or even just maybe moment of boredom, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I can detect when I need it, and I do my best at those points in time, no matter what is going on, to find a way to tap into.
It's almost like, you know, the self-awareness and the enlightenment and even great self-introspection to have the capacity to sort of meditate in the middle of a hurricane.
Sure,
you know, exactly. And I imagine that that helps in the creative process too, because, you know, I've been thinking about this new album for you, and it seems like you went kind of deep into the museum archives of your life and let the experiences guide in some ways that creative process. Was this at all an experience of liberation for you? Was it combined with a lot of just sort of like reaffirming of who you are?
It was definitely, it was a profound process. To call it liberation or not, I'm not sure. I'm not yet sure.
Okay.
Because liberation is a big one.
Yeah.
But I will say this. So we started making the album June or like May, June of 2021. And it was at the tail end of the pandemic. I'd very randomly, serendipitously connected with a producer named Ryan Olson, who lives in Minneapolis. And we connected on Instagram. Like I said, he's very kind of anonymous on there, not really like very social media forward facing. Sure. But the way we connected was already like, again, very random. And he was a fan of this cover that I posted up on my Instagram. I'd been checking out the music that he'd been working on. He kept saying, come out to Minneapolis. I was putting it off. I grew up on the coast in California. I went to college in Boston. So like,
right.
I was used to being on the coast. I didn't really, I'd been to Chicago, but Chicago is different from the rest of the Midwest in many ways.
Yeah.
So I just didn't know. And I'm a creature of habit and comfort. But my dad, who manages me at one point, was like, yo, just go see what's going on over there. Seems like they have something special. And you can't, you know, he's always been one to kind of push me out outside of my comfort zone, especially when he detects something with his sixth sense that there's something special going on somewhere. So I took the trip. And, you know, before that, just for a bit of context, I was really at a point where I was going to close up shop on all my English language music. I'd been trying it for a while, on and off. Wasn't really going where I'd wanted it to go. And I have this illustrious career in India that's, you know, so I was like, I'm just going to move there full time.
Right.
This trip happened right before I was kind of like, I really decided I'd already booked the ticket back to India. I was going to be in the States for a couple more months. And I went to Minneapolis those 3 days, and those 3 days changed my whole life, where it was just this huge cascade of serendipity, of grace, of joy. It was me, Ryan, six other people in the room, just creating together without any agenda, without any ego. Everyone was just so excited and happy to be in the room with other people making music again after this pandemic where everyone had been disjointed for so long.
Did that feel like home, by the way?
Yeah, immediately, actually. Yeah. At first, I was a little, again, I'm by nature just a cautious person when I'm in a new environment. So I wasn't all the way open and whatnot. But by the second day, there was a feeling of just like deep warmth and belonging and home. Yeah. And I've only really ever felt that with my parents and my sister. Like, we're a close knit group of us four. So that's been my only context of the feeling of home. And very quickly with these guys, it felt that way. And because of that, and because of, you know, divine forces, we were hit with this creative wave that was, you couldn't not submit to it and surrender to it. It hit like that, where I've had moments before where like I've had great ideas for a song or something like that. But this was just like, it was a wave. It was as powerful as can be. And for the next 8 months, I just kind of submitted to it. I surrendered to it and I held on. Mm-hmm. And because I'd done the work through the pandemic of what we're talking about, of like working day in and day out with no goal in mind, when it came to making this album, and once I realized, I didn't even realize at first that this was the album. I thought this was just like a side project that I was going to make for the first like couple of weeks. But every day I'd wake up and treated it almost like a job, where I would just work on a song, excavate from the initial. In those 3 days, we made 30 ideas. And from that, we kind of like brought that down to 13, which is the album. But in that process of chiseling through and excavating, you know, it was really that, taking the source material from those 3 days and then going in and really culling and figuring out what the songs are.
When it sounds like that atmosphere allowed you to also like, A, be yourself, B, sort of excavate all those things that you're talking about and accept and embrace that tidal wave, if you will. But it sounds like it seems like it was a great atmosphere to take risks and almost, you know, in some ways kind of explore and journey into a lot of unknown, sounds like. And I mean, it makes me think a little bit about, for you personally, what did you perhaps have to unlearn? I mean, particularly about your art or even about yourself in making this album.
The biggest thing I had to unlearn was this desire for control. I think more than anything else, I think this process was one where I relinquished control in different ways. One, the surrendering to something outside of myself on a daily basis, really channeling. That was one example. The other example is I've never really worked with another creative or producer at this capacity, where it's always been me kind of doing everything. Like the music I was making before this, and I'd been working on a whole other album. I wanted to be like Prince. I wanted to play every instrument. I wanted to write everything. I wanted to record everything, you know? And I don't know what the reason behind that was, but once it got into this process, I really, with Ryan, I was like, I had that producer-artist relationship where everything was very collaborative, but I was willing to hand over the reins in a way to someone else. I think those were big things I unlearned. The third thing, probably, I used to write music that was based in pain a lot, but there's a lot of joy on this album.
Yeah,
you know, so like allowing myself to really kind of embrace happiness and celebrate it and express it by way of music. I've always been somewhat vulnerable in my art, but this was an album where I feel like I was able to really articulate what I meant. So before, when you're asking about liberation, I think what I did find in this is an acceptance of identity, the spectrum of it, rather than having to just highlight one aspect of myself or one very narrow sliver of my identity. This felt like the first time where I was honestly accepting, embracing, and celebrating the whole spectrum.
Was that surprising, by the way? I mean, did you at some point, was it just
new?
Yeah,
it felt new. I don't know if it didn't come as a surprise, because everything in this process honestly felt like breathing air. It felt very, very, very natural.
Yeah.
But it did feel new. Like, you know, sometimes if you forget to take a deep breath for a period of time and then suddenly you take, it just fills up your lungs and you just feel like life rushing.
Right. Yeah.
That's kind of what this felt like. It felt new in that way.
Yeah. I mean, sort of like a lot of nourishment and the oxygen that you need to sort of like keep things going, and whether it's a creative fire or finding good peace and kind of that stillness that we've been talking about.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with Sid Sriram. Stay tuned. Conversation. It's the antidote to apathy and the catalyst for relationships. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, this is Madhuri Dixit, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing with Abhay Dandekar.
Welcome back to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's now rejoin our conversation with Sid Sriram.
I was thinking a little bit about, you know, in general that you talked about sort of like embracing the identity or like feeling that newness to it. And, you know, your art and voice and creativity have truly made you a fixture in the Indian music cultural framework. And I'm curious, in now reflecting on that success and this new album coming out, how much, for lack of a better way to put it, how much Americanism sort of bleeds into your Indian musical expression, and for that matter, vice versa, right? I mean, yes, there's the fusion, and I personally hate that word. I mean, I love to think of it of more as a expression that's integrated. But how much of this do you owe to truly being an American kid from Fremont?
A lot of it. I think my life has always been like these shifting frameworks. There's obviously like a very profound framework of where you're born that is like a subconscious, like deep, deep thing. And I was born in Mandaveli in Chennai, and we moved to the States in 91. And I can only imagine that very little, but that initial core time spent there instilled a certain sense of identity that will live with me forever. But growing up in Fremont, you know, and I was there since I was a year old, went to like all public school through high school over there, that forms and informs a lot of who I am, whether it be the music I listen to, whether it be the way I speak, or just like very, very subtle things like body language. And that's not just an American thing. For me, that's like a Bay Area American thing. You know, like the Bay Area is very close to me, and I love that part of California deeply. And I think it's growing up in the suburbs, you know, there's there's different things that come with growing up in the suburbs, a certain quietness, a certain peace, a certain safety, also a certain melancholy. You know what I mean? Like, these are all things. So I went to college in Boston and Berkeley, and again, another set of formative years, early college, of being in that city, being amidst an ecosystem of creatives and musicians. And then from 2016 onwards, I started spending like a kind of majority of my time in Chennai again. So that was where I really grew my roots there again. This album, the way I kind of explain it to people, it's like the Minneapolis winter, or just like that texture meets California, Northern California suburbs meets the vibrance of Chennai. It's kind of like it all came together very organically. It wasn't like we set off wanting to do this thing. It just happened. So with that said, my Americanness is one of the most core elements of this album. You know, just by virtue of the fact that it's all in English, or 90%, 95% of it is in English, but also the spirit of it. You know, there's and I think you also asked how much of that has informed my Indian music. Again, I think I am someone born in India, raised in America in the Bay. That aspect of my identity lives in everything that I do, specifically with regards to what I've done in India. In Carnatic music, I won't say that necessarily comes out in any aspect of the aesthetic of the form, because very traditional in terms of the musical output. Like, I stay true to the aesthetic form of Carnatic music. The way I present those concerts is very much in the space, the boundaries, aesthetic boundaries and parameters of what Carnatic music is. But I will say that the fact that I'm a mixture of all these different influences, both just in terms of life and art and music, that has instilled in me something I've really especially embraced in the last few years, a certain sense of freedom when it comes to any music form I approach, where my goal is to be able to find and express my own unique voice. in whatever space I'm in. So Carnatic music, that freedom, definitely, I think I've really found, and I'm articulating, expressing my perspective in the music within the bounds of the music, but still making sure that who I am is really ringing true. And that is the case with all my favorite Carnatic musicians of the yesteryear. They were very much themselves while still, you know, living,
being true to the tradition.
Being very, and just the tradition and the complexity of the form and all of its dimension, allowing it to really shine through their vision of it. For the film stuff, I think the biggest thing that I've done, one, my first song being Adiye, and that literally being this blues soul song that mixed with like Tamil fisherman folk that only Era Man could have dreamt up. That, I know, like, I was the person to sing that song because I come from these different things. And then even like the more Carnatic based pieces that I've been a part of that still have this kind of unique borrowing from other spaces, you know, or just like the flowing in and out of different genres.
Yeah.
I think that's something that my background as an Indo-American has allowed me.
And in that same, you know, spirit, right? Like you mentioned the touch points of being who you are, being an Indo-American, the Carnatic music, the Bollywood music, the R&B, the soul, grown up in California, formative years in Boston, kind of that like musical journey and then excavating this ongoing soundtrack, right? Whether it's from growing up in the 90s and the 2000s and then now and making this new album. As I hear you speak, I'm curious, what did you learn about being, or how have you sort of synthesized all of this in being an effective listener? The listening of all this music must have, you know, some great power in how you express yourself. So I'm just curious, like, how does all this resonate for you as a music appreciator, as a music listener?
Sure. I've always been this way, and it's only kind of become more robust over the years, but trying to just like find new music to listen to and not judging it immediately. I think like that's been, because like my ear obviously naturally tends towards certain forms of music, certain sounds, certain genres. But the biggest thing that I try to do consistently is discover new forms or new spaces and listen openly and see what it inspires before having a judgment of whether I like it or not. We as human beings are just very powerful systems, like intellectual systems, where there's something really magical that happens when you take in information, let it sit, let it kind of like mull in your own consciousness or whatnot. And then what you output later inevitably is going to have some sort of fragment of or something from the texture of that fabric that you took in. And that is something I try to do a little bit more, not even intentionally now, but listening to music when you're constantly making music or constantly performing can get pretty draining sometimes. Like sometimes you just feel like silence.
Right.
But what I try to do is treat it like an element, like what anything else. And especially if I find something new that I like, then I really dive into it. So I think, like, you know how like in high school or like in even elementary school, every kid kind of has the thing that they feel is their own almost.
Yeah.
It's almost like not a coping mechanism, but especially being an immigrant, it's a way to just kind of like somehow find your way through identity crisis. For me, it was music, just like singing. But just I was the kid with the Walkman or like the CD player with headphones on whenever I could have it. You know, even like I remember when I was ninth grade, I had a math class where I'd ask for permission where I could listen to music while taking tests. So I've been doing it for a long time. And I've just, I think in the last decade, probably more consciously realized the impact it has on me, both just as a human and as an artist, but especially as an artist with regards to what I was saying before in terms of the input and output.
When I listen to your music as in that same sort of vein, in that same spirit, to me at least, right, your music exudes so much soul, and there's a piece that I appreciate, but as well as a distinct power. And when I think about it as sort of that spiritual experience, to however way that's defined for anyone, right, is that a reflection at all, a mirror of who you are as a person, or is it more of a persona that exists when you are expressing your art?
Oh no, I think it's a direct reflection. I think of who I am, the depths of who I am. I think my biggest kind of what I kind of keep at the center of everything that I do, especially artistically, is the deep need to be honest in every possible way. So it's all the music that I make, especially the music that I write myself, is just a direct manifestation of what's happening within myself, a direct manifestation of the questions that I'm asking and the journey that I'm on. I think for me, music is a beautifully powerful and profound mechanism to try to identify and resonate with universal truths. And that's my pursuit, is finding those. And the music is about that. It's either about directly about that, or it's about anecdotes along the journey that are kind of pushing me in that direction, or examinations of, I think you said something really interesting, like pieces from the museum of my past, I think was maybe the phrase that you used. Examining those to see how that has informed the way I look into the future. So it's all kind of tied into this journey for and search for truth.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with singer and songwriter Sid Sriram. Every story told is a lesson learned, and every lesson learned is a story waiting to be told. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, my name is Richa Morjani, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing with Abhay Dandekar.
Hi there, I'm Abhay Dandekar, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with singer and songwriter Sid Sriram.
For something that's just so, like when I'm hearing you say that, it's something that's so personal, and it's such a deeply and in some ways kind of profoundly private sort of thinking, right? And yet the music business in 2023 is anything but private, and it's anything but solely dictated by your own vantage point. There's so many stakeholders involved. There's audience people like me, or fans, or listeners, and whatnot. So, how do you grapple with that part of it? In the sense of, like, how do you measure success as a musician in 2023?
I'm still figuring it out every day.
Right.
Honestly, you know, like this last year has been a period of transformation and a shift for me. The last decade of my career has had me in one space, and I'm still continuing that. I'm still very much a part of the film music industry in India, but this has been a point of transition. So I think I'm figuring out in real, and I enjoyed and was blessed with success in various ways in this last decade. You know, it's been a great thing for me, both in terms of appreciating and enjoying the success, but also many lessons learned. Lessons that are really kind of faring me well as I'm going into this new phase of what I'm doing. But I think, everyone wants to be making a lot of money, doing what they're doing. Everyone wants to, especially if you're in like this forward-facing industry where you have influence, you know, those are things that they're important in a certain way. But for me, I think the measure of success has been, and at first it was more conceptual and abstract as we were before we started releasing the album, but is having these, you know, making this music for me has been like a lot of digging in, healing, just a lot of just like deconstruction and then construction in a way that has allowed me to improve and evolve as a human being. So in that way, success was already achieved when we made this record. You know, like I made something for the first time that felt like a deeply, deeply honest expression of all that is me. Right. And in the process, I made a new family of people, people that I'll probably, you know, will be family for a long time. And we made something that's based in love and joy, you know? So in that level, this is the first time that I made music where I'm not seeking any validation from it. I know what we made, and I can stand on it with the utmost just like pride and joy and all that. So I think that checks off a huge box. Now, the other big thing that was more of an abstraction and conceptual thing before was having this music allow other people to heal as well. you know, like as they kind of experience it, feel it, or whether it be heal, like just really having it be a mechanism for others to also feel something deep, feel something maybe completely new. And, you know, you think about those things while you're making the music, because the people that you're making it with feel that way. Some, you know, we'd have people come by the studio, different friends, and like they'd feel that way. And you're like, okay, something is, there's something right about this. And my biggest barometer for every song that I write, especially on this album while we were making it, was if at some point it made me cry while we were making it, then it's like, okay, we got the thing. We can, now we just have to do everything to communicate that thing, but we got the thing. So as we've been releasing these songs, as we've been doing these shows, as we did Tiny Desk, I've been seeing that that is the impact it has on people. If that's happening, if people are able to find peace with this music, heal with the music, reconnect with aspects of themselves that they either never knew were there or had long forgotten, then success is achieved, for sure.
In some ways, people revert to comfort in so many different elements, right? Whether it's food, whether it's people, whether it's music, whether it's anything for that matter. And they find solace in that. Did you find an equal amount of solace in the music as you were making it? I mean, the thinking I have is that, like, you know, you find comforting space in who you are. You're an Indian American. Sometimes that label can be comforting. It can also be a burden. It may not be fair. But at the same time, does this album feel like it's comforting? I mean, some people have everything from comfort food to a comfort rag that they feel, right? I mean, in your case, were you able to harness on some of that?
Yeah, I think so. I think the comfort I felt from this was, like, there'd be times, like there's one trip I made to Colorado to visit my sister after maybe my second time in Minneapolis. So basically I went for those 3 days, then I went back to the Bay, recorded some vocals, went back like a month later, and it's like those three such trips. After the second trip to Minneapolis, I went to visit my sister, and I was just, my parents were also there. We were all visiting, and I was sitting in the back of the car as we were like going to buy some paint for her house or something. And I just felt like a kid again, because, you know, sitting in like the back seat is not something I do as much anymore, you know.
Right.
So, but it just like we were like on the freeway, I sit in the back seat, I had my headphones on listening to the demos, and Justin Vernon from Bon Iver was one of the people in that initial group of 6 days, and he played acoustic guitar on a bunch of the songs. And on Dear Sahana, the song Dear Sahana, he played an acoustic guitar solo. And we were driving, and I was listening to that song, and I was already feeling good, and that solo came on and really kind of like had me tearing up. And so the comfort I think I felt was, I don't know, man, I think for so much of my life, music was something that I expressed in music a majority of the time, or a lot of the time, with a chip on my shoulder. Like, I know I'm this good. Like, people have to know I'm this good, having to prove something. And that moment when I heard that bit of that song, or like various other moments in the process of making the album, it kind of just gave me permission to not have to like do that, have to like, prove anything, or just have like, or just to shake the chip off and be like, this only has to be a form of expression and nothing more, nothing less, you know. And that's what I found comfort. It was like, finally I felt that. And I have felt that in fleeting moments over the years, especially, or only when performing on stage or when performing in front of other people or singing, but never when making records. This was the first time where we made a record, and I felt that at various points. And again, I had a show at the Roxy last week, and I ended it with this Tamil prayer, which was not part of the set list. We did an encore, and then I just sang that, just only voice, nothing else. But right before that, there's a lot of South Asian people, whether it be Indian, Pakistani, Sri Lankan, just like a lot of them younger. And what I was talking about is, like, specifically for me, I found the permission to not have to adhere to anything. And sometimes those things are very subtle. Like what I'm talking about, this need to have to prove something is not like something everyone is telling us every day. But as a community that has not been represented, there is this inbuilt thing, like if we don't prove something, we're not going to get seen. And it's a realization that was subconscious through the part of process to make this album. But it really only dawned on me, like, intellectually when I was on stage speaking before I sang that last piece, where I told everyone what I realized, that we have the permission to do whatever we want, right?
Yep.
And that can be make whatever music we need to make, whatever it is. There's no box that we have to exist within. And speaking to myself now, there's nothing we have to live up to. The responsibility is to create. And this is a very long-winded answer to the question of that's what I found my solace and comfort in those points in time where I was like, I'm making a thing. It feels so deeply honest. Yeah. And that it felt like just like a warm embrace of self.
Well, I love it. I mean, it's very palpable, obviously, for listening to you now, but definitely for the people in that audience. I'm sure it is more palpable and going to be very palpable for those listening to the album. I'm going to borrow a line from The Hard Way, but what are you seeing beyond your own sunsets now?
Oh, man. I don't want to say I was selfish because I think I've always been a kind, warm, empathetic person. Like, as I think that's kind of naturally built into my DNA. But being a musician, being an artist, and growing up in a social setting where celebrity is celebrated, you know, I coveted fame so hard for so long. And through that, and this is since I was young, like since I was like 7 or 8. And I realized I don't have to be at the center of every pursuit, even of my own. Like the idea of me needn't or shouldn't be at the center of it. Even if I'm looking into my own personal experience, flaws, strengths, whatever, I think the intention should be something that is greater than self, right? And that I think that is what is beyond my sunsets. That song specifically is about really expressing love to those closest to you, you know, and not just taking that expression for granted, really letting them know, really celebrating that with them, whether that be my family, whether that be close friends, whatever. And I think I was able to write that song was, you know, I was only able to write that song specifically because I'd spent a year and change with my parents seeing no one else but their two faces every day during the pandemic, you know, and that that played such a big role in shifting me out of this idea that music has to be an ego-centric process.
For anybody who might be perhaps listening to your music and discovering your music and your art for the first time, and they're brand new audience members, how do you hope they feel after listening to your music?
I think open and vulnerable. If the music can make them feel like that funny feeling in your gut or like within your heart when something just like strikes you in a way you weren't expecting, you know, and it just opens something up and allows for emotions to flood in, that's what I want.
Well, listen, Sid, you're giving permission for so many things to happen in so many wonderful ways. We're grateful that you're able to join us, and I hope we can come back and visit with you again.
Thank you, man. I really mean it from my heart. I truly appreciate this conversation.
Thanks so much, Sid. And please check out his newly releasing album, Siddharth. I'm again grateful to everyone for listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, and sharing and offering your kind reviews and ratings. Till next time, I'm Abhay Dandekar.